This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Tuesday, September the 20th. I'm Angela Denning. Community and business leaders from all over Southeast are here in Petersburg this week for the annual meeting of the Southeast Conference. The meeting began this morning in Petersburg's Community Center. A few hundred people are gathering in the community gym to discuss how the region is doing economically and what the future looks like. The group's key issues are transportation, energy, the marine industry, timber, mining, and food security. To start the meeting off, the local Boy Scouts troop presented the flag. Then it was the national anthem and the Alaska flag song.
Eight stars of gold on a field of...
Then attendees were welcomed by Southeast Conference President Gary White.
You know, we're here to discuss economic development and how we can better the quality of life for all of us here in Southeast Alaska. And, you know, I consider, you know, quality of life, you know, having a good job, having an affordable place to live, having, you know, infrastructure, having health care, all these things is what Southeast Conference tries to bring to all the residents of Southeast.
White said he hoped the conference would better the region's situation. Petersburg Vice Mayor Cindy Lagadakis welcomed the crowd by highlighting some of the town's remarkable events and residents.
We hope that while you are here, you will take some time to soak up some of our colorful local history and enjoy a few of the amenities that make Petersburg a great place to live.
The Southeast Conference was incorporated in 1958. It's governed by a 13-member board of directors. The annual meeting will be held in Petersburg through Thursday. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning. A proposed tax on marijuana and marijuana products advanced in second reading yesterday before the Petersburg Borough Assembly. However, the Assembly voted to change the wording for future use of the proceeds of such a tax. Joe Vignicki reports.
If voters approve commercial marijuana sales in the borough in next month's election, a new tax of $25 an ounce could be charged on all pot grown in the borough or any marijuana products produced locally. That same amount would also be collected on any pot imported for commercial sales here. Discussion on the proposed tax at the Assembly level has focused on what to do with any future revenue. Local resident Marge Oinis wanted to ensure that some of the money would go to fund drug and alcohol counseling costs, and she pointed at the willingness to do this in other states.
So there is some understanding that what our borough is considering causes an increase in some kind of need for treatment.
The proposed tax was initially drafted to go entirely into the borough's property development fund. That's a pool of money that the borough uses for land purchases, along with construction or maintenance of borough buildings. The Assembly also can transfer money into or out of that fund, depending on the needs of the municipality. During the first reading of the ordinance, the Assembly agreed with Oinis to add language to use up to 50% of the tax proceeds for funding substance abuse counseling. However, Nancy Strand opposed that idea earlier this month, and she wanted to change it back Monday to its original wording.
I'm not comfortable with earmarking funds for any special thing. The Property Development Fund is about as far as I'll go, and I like that the dispersal of the funds be discussed by the Assembly at budget time annually.
Several on the Assembly pointed to the difficulty in allocating borough payments to community organizations each spring during the borough budget process. J. Stanton Greger agreed that the tax proceeds shouldn't go into that part of the budget directly.
I'd like to avoid those struggles again in the future, keep things streamlined. And if the Property Development Fund is something we feel isn't a good place to put this money in the future, we can always change our minds and do something else with it. We can always switch course if need be.
The Assembly voted 4-1 to change the ordinance to put all the tax revenue into the Property Development Fund, with Cindy Lagadakis the only no vote. Then the vote was unanimous 5-0 to pass the tax ordinance in second reading. Stanton Greger explained his support for the new tax.
Yeah, I mentioned this last time, with both state and federal monies, becoming less and less for Petersburg. I think this is a great opportunity for us to make money for the community. I'll definitely be voting for it.
The ordinance needs one more approval by the Assembly next month before it takes effect, and it will remain on the books but not enforced if voters decide to prohibit commercial sales and importation here October 4th. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
The Alaska Marine Highway System's largest ferry needs work on one of its propellers. The 500-passenger Columbia will soon head to a Portland, Oregon shipyard for repairs. As a result, most of Southeast Alaska's larger cities will lose one or two port calls a week. Sitka will go 2 full weeks without ferry service. Marine Highway spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says crews noticed a vibration last week when the ferry ran at full speed. Divers then inspected the ship's two propellers during a stop and wrangle and discovered why the ship was shaking.
They noticed that on one of the blades of the starboard propeller had a noticeable bend to it where it looked like it had been hit by something. Assumption is maybe a submerged log or something along those lines that could do some damage to a large propeller like that.
The Columbia is sailing a delayed schedule through September 25th before heading to Portland for repairs. Woodrow says the Columbia continues using both of its propellers, but the damage to one means its maximum speed is 13 knots. That's 2 knots slower than its regular rate of travel.
If you were running, say, shorter distances, maybe a Haines to Skagway and back every day, you wouldn't really notice that difference. But when you're doing 18-hour longer hauls, say, Juneau to Ketchikan and Ketchikan to Bellingham, that 2-knot difference really adds up.
Communities affected are Haines, Skagway, Juneau, Sitka, Petersburg, Wrangell, Ketchikan, and Bellingham, Washington. Woodrow says budget cuts mean no other ferries are available to fill in.
The soonest the Columbia is likely to come back into service is going to be Friday, October 7th, if repairs go as planned in Portland.
The Columbia is more than 40 years old. A small mudslide obstructed a portion of State Highway in Sitka early last Friday morning, but there was no other damage or injury from the event. A motorist reported the slide in the 1800 block of Halibut Point Road to the Sitka Police Department at 2:20 a.m. The caller told dispatch that mud and debris had crossed the sidewalk and still appeared to be moving. Sitka Fire Chief Dave Miller responded to the scene and, although the slide looked small, he decided to take no chances.
We called out sort of everybody because there was an electrical pole right next to it. We called out to the electric department, and Michael Harmon came out. And we went up, and a couple of us went up, and we knocked on the two doors that are right at the top of the hill, right above it, and just let them, as a forewarning, let them know that something was happening. We weren't too real worried about it, but we just wanted to make sure that they knew about it.
The embankment along this stretch of Halibut Point Road has been prone to slides before, some in very recent memory. In 2000, about a half mile to the east, a mudslide destroyed a vacated shop building owned by the State Department of Transportation. Miller admits that after last year's fatalities on Kramer Avenue, the community is, quote, sensitive to slides. He says it informed his decision to mobilize significant city resources for what proved to be a relatively small event. Miller says that after the mission was over at about 5 a.m., he stopped in across the street at C-Mart for some breakfast and met a couple of longtime residents.
We talked briefly about the slides, and they'd been here for a lot of years, and they said that area used to have little slides all the time.
The National Weather Service recorded 1.13 inches of rain in Sitka on Thursday, almost an inch above normal for the day. By comparison, on August 18th of 2015, the day of the Kramer slide, Sitka recorded over 3 inches of rain, much of it in about 6 hours. Petersburg High School girls' cross-country team came in second place at a meet in Juneau on Saturday. Petersburg missed tying the top team in the region by just 1 point. Kaylee Eddy led the team in with a fifth-place finish, followed by Milani Chase in sixth, Aaron Font in eighth, Shyla Cook in tenth, and Julia Murph in 14th. The boys' team took 7th place overall. Nathaniel Lenhard was 24th, followed by Tolan Eddy in 30th. Joe Vicnicki spoke with Coach Tommy Thompson about the race.
We lost to the junior girls by 1 point, which is kind of the powerhouse of Southeast right now, and our girls did a fantastic job. They ran so great. We actually, with the scoring teams for the 1A, 2A, 3A, we actually came in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So if we just scored it out as a 3A meet, we would have had a perfect score, which was fantastic. Kind of like at Regions last year where we were so close. So, yeah, the girls, Kaylee, Melanie, Erin, Shyla, Julia, came across just in a huge pack. And then soon after, Megan, Ava, and Alexander and Madison, they just ran great considering the mud and the conditions. And it was fun to see them as a team just do so well. They really... This is the best race we've had as a team since I've been here, at least. Never so close to Juno. I think we lost to Juno by about 14 or 18 points a couple weeks ago. But Juno has the number one runner in the state, 4A, and some other really good runners, and our girls really showed their mettle. It was fantastic.
And on the boys' side, what did you see over there?
Boys' side, you know, it's amazing. This time of year, every single wrestler is getting in good shape, and every single basketball player from all the small communities, 1, 2, and 3. The Sitka team still is dominating, but our boys did great. When you scored it out just for 1A, 2A, 3A, we actually tied for second behind Sitka. Sitka had a really low score of 17, and then we tied with Skagway for second, and then Mountage came in right after us. And it's going to be very close between the three of us to get those spots to go to state. But the boys, you know, Nathaniel let us in again. Tolanetti, who's our sophomore, had a great run last year. The cold kind of kicked him around, and this year he recovered well. Another sophomore, Cornsboro, had a good run, but then our freshman did great. Thomas Durkin and Noah Sullivan ran really well. Cole Sproul, great. And then our senior, Daniel Hornberg, had a solid race. And then another freshman, Isaac Taylor, and Jack Byer, you know, rounded us out, and it's a good young team and tons of potential, and, you know, really hopeful to be able to take both teams to state, but we got a little bit of work to do next Saturday.
What's the course like in Sitka? Where are they running?
They'll run in Totem Park, and it's basically two loops of the Totem Park, and it's very flat, goes over the river there, so usually it's full of salmon, and so it inspires kids to run fast and get done. But a beautiful course, going to be a little muddy, but very flat, so it's some kids run really well in the flats, and other kids need some hills. We're more of a hill team, kind of get stuck in the flats, so we're going to have to get our spikes on and really go. But the nice thing is that the 3A, 2A, 1A will run separate from the 4A, so there'll be fewer runners on the course, which helps us. We don't get stuck behind people and don't have to dodge our way out of the out of the race.
The teams head to the region meet this weekend in Sitka. For the past 6 weeks, give or take a few days, a California man rode his converted kayak up the Inside Passage from Bellingham, Washington, to Ketchikan. He was raising awareness and funds for multiple myeloma, a cancer of the blood that affects his family in a deeply personal way. KRBD's Layla Carey met John Tausig at Ketchikan's Thomas Basin Boat Harbor to talk about his approximately 600-mile journey.
John Tausig's decision to solo paddle to Alaska was sort of accidental. His mother, a breast cancer survivor, was diagnosed about a year ago with multiple myeloma. Anyone who's battled cancer or is close to someone who has been through it knows the treatment can be brutal. Tausig says his mother had radiation therapy and a serious regimen of medication to qualify for stem cell therapy.
During the course of this, we were bouncing around an email around our family that was like, oh, we should do a fundraiser, and we were thinking about like relays and, you know, just fun stuff. And I mentioned I would row up to Alaska, something I'd never done before, or I've never rowed at all, much less any distance. And then I had a couple donations, and then I basically had to do it.
Tausig isn't a stranger to the sea, though. He grew up sailing and lives on a sailboat in Santa Cruz, California. So it makes sense that he added a sail to his 40-year-old foldable kayak. He also attached a couple of makeshift outriggers for stability, made out of broken surfboards he found at a garage sale, and strapped a toddler's camping cot to the deck to hold its gear. And then Tausig dropped a sliding rowing seat into the kayak so he could row his way up the coast. He says when he first started training for this adventure, he figured out traditional kayak paddling wasn't for him.
I couldn't go more than an hour without having my legs fall asleep and pain in my back. And in fact, I had an x-ray in April on my back. I wasn't sure if it was a work injury or if it was if I had slipped a disc or something. And they said, no, you look pretty good.
So it was all that sitting that caused the pain. With a sliding rowing seat, Tausig says he's not just sitting the whole time. He's using his legs and back in addition to his arms and core.
And I didn't have 1 minute of pain. In fact, I feel better now today than I did when I left the trip.
The only downside was facing backwards the entire trip, which started at the Bellingham Ferry Terminal on August 8th. The first part of the trip was great. Tausig says the weather was warm and sunny, not too breezy. And then he got to Nanaimo on Vancouver Island, BC, and the wind kept him there 4 days.
I would leave the harbor and get blown right back to Newcastle and Protection Island. And, at that time, people were saying, you know, this could last for a month, and you may never make it out of here.
But he did it. It took 14 hours to get through barely 10 miles, but he did it. And once he got through that rough patch, the wind was a little more cooperative. Tausig says he loved experiencing how quiet life is when traveling through largely unpopulated areas. He also encountered a whole lot of great people.
I did not even realize that this would be just the cornerstone of the trip, but I was able to have just the most fantastic experiences with Canadians and some Americans that I met along the way who were just insistent on being so helpful.
At various stops, Tausig says those helpful people fed him, let him use their showers, warmed him up, fixed his boat, repaired his sail, and donated to his cause. Tausig was able to raise more than $20,000 for the International Myeloma Foundation, which funds research into the disease and supports families affected by multiple myeloma. The organization lets the fundraiser decide where the money raised will go. Tausig says he's not sure yet where he'll allocate the money. He says it's up to his mother and his uncle, who also has multiple myeloma, to determine what they think would be the most helpful.
I know my mother, she was a cancer researcher at one point in time, and she is really interested in sort of individualized patient treatment options. So there's a couple different studies that are going on that the grant could go towards.
Tausig says his mother is doing well after a stem cell transplant, although she'll probably always have the disease. But he says cancer research is moving forward quickly, and he believes cures will be discovered in his lifetime. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
And I'm Angela Dunning. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. Thanks for listening.